Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on the issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
So welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. Before we get started and introduce today's guest, there's an event I wanted to bring to everybody's attention here in Colorado Springs, if you're in the local area, the Cyber Synergy at CTU. This event is hosted by Colorado Technical University in partnership with New Cyber Frontier on October 18th, 2017. That's Wednesday, October 18th, 2017. You won't want to miss it. It is free to the public. All you do is RSVP at coscareerservices@coloradotech.edu. You can also find the links underneath this podcast for today. But this event's going to feature some great guest speakers from Colorado Economic Development, the National Cybersecurity Center, and a panel from the Colorado National Guard, Cyber Resilience Institute, Information Systems Security Association, National Renewable Energy Laboratory, Pikes Peak Community College, and the Western Area Power Exchange, as well as be hosted by myself. So look forward to seeing you there, and hope you enjoy today's show as well. Today we have on with us Doug Cameron, who is a 20-year veteran of government security. He's been doing this for a while. He also is the president of FSO Source, which we're going to talk about what he does and how that fits in as we go through today's show. But Doug and I had a conversation a while back, and I thought, wow, we just need to put this out about government security clearances. I have so many students asking me how to get a clearance, what is the process, and this is Doug's area of expertise and just a great resource. Doug, welcome today. Thanks for joining.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Well, definitely glad to hear about clearances. First of all, many of us in the government or working for the government need to have these clearances. So secret, top secret, what's the difference? What do I need to know, first of all, high level about government clearances?
Well, the biggest information you need to know is that if you're in a cleared contract or you're working for a cleared company and you're supposed to have a clearance in order to support that contract, or you're going for a government position that requires a contract, you're going to have to fill out a long process, fill out a lot of paperwork. You got to remember where you lived 10 years ago. You got to have somebody who knew you 3 years ago and where you lived. And you're going to have to know all of this information. You're going to have to put it all down in a long document. It's about 50 pages. It's your entire life and everybody that's ever been involved with it. And then the government gets to investigate and determine, one, if you've told them everything, that's the most important part. And two, if there's anything that they need to worry about as far as you becoming a counterintelligence or a threat, an insider threat.
Okay, so a long process, and we'll get into more details about that, but it always, someone that gets into this much detail about the government, what's your background? How did you start? How did you get to the point where this is what you do?
So I'm a 20-year veteran of the Air Force, have been an SSO, that's a Special Security Officer, mm-hmm. For the Air Force multiple times. And I retired, and I started.
So you did this for the Air Force before you got out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I did it for the Air Force. I did it for Special Operations Command. I've done it for NORTHCOM. I've done it for a number of different agencies throughout my career. And then retired, started my own security consulting company, and then found a niche in the market where I help small and medium-sized businesses with their industrial security challenges.
Industrial security, meaning the company getting secured to be able to do contract work.
So the program is called National Industrial Security Program.
Okay.
That's the overarching federal government program rules, regulations, requirements for that is common for every single federal agency. There's one manual, there's one regulation. Unfortunately, every single or many federal agencies decide to have their own application of it, but it's a standard set of guidelines.
Okay, so you have to be knee deep in all these legal requirements for the military.
Not just knee deep, and not just the military. It's Department of Energy, it's Nuclear Regulatory Commission, it's FAA, it's TSA, DHS. Every federal agency out there has a different set of applications of the central rules. So you have to know the central rules, and then you have to know how each federal agencies, and sometimes even how their sub-agencies work, how they want their personal clearances sent to them. And it takes a number of years and experience to figure out how to satisfy a specific federal agency.
Okay. So we're going to come right back and talk more about the details about when we need this, what we need it, and who needs to be involved right after we hear from our sponsors.
Here's something important that you'll want to put into your calendar. The annual Cyber Symposium, Wednesday, November 1st through Friday, November 3rd, 2017. Brought to you by the National Cybersecurity Center. The annual Cyber Symposium is where elected officials and decision makers get the latest information on the key cyber issues of today. It's where they become better equipped to take action on the cybersecurity issues for your state, your city, and your company. RSVP now at www.cybersymposium.org. That's www.cybersymposium.org. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
So welcome back. Today we're still talking to Doug Cameron about government security clearances and securing businesses, what they need to do to become involved is his area of expertise. So we have so many students, Doug, that are, you know, in the program with a degree program and saying, well, I want to, so many jobs around Colorado, our government requires security clearance. And they want to know about what is involved. We talked a little bit before how there's a 30-page application, everything you've ever done in your life. I know I've been through this process, and the first time I ever had to do it, they gave me this list of things I needed, and I looked at it and said, I've never kept that information. Is that your experience? The first time people see this is like, well, I don't even know where all that would be.
Yeah, they give you 30 days from when your FSO sends you your personal security clearance. You have 30 days to get that information back to them. And for some people, it's a race. For a top secret clearance, you have to go back 10 years. So every place you've lived, mm-hmm. and I mean every place. And so if you were deployed to a location, guess what? That counts. Any place you've been for more than 90 days has to be on there. So let's say you went on a vacation somewhere and you were, hitchhiking through Europe for 90 days. Guess what? You have to have your whole itinerary. Every single place you stayed at, every single place you went to for that entire journey in that report. And so it's not just where you lived, it's where you worked. A lot of students, I know my son, he's on his multiple job, not because he didn't enjoy it, but just because he didn't find his niche. Well, guess what? Every single job you have to have listed, location, supervisor, the whole bit, all that's got to be recorded. And so a lot of people don't have that information, and it takes them a long time to get that information.
Wow. Not anything you stayed at over 90 days, even if it's like you're on the road, you're traveling through Europe, and you have to know where you're at for that 90-day period.
Any period of 90 days has to be accounted for.
Well, there's probably periods of 90 days where I can't account for. I've been on tour for a couple years and traveling around with like RV and stuff. I don't think I could do that now. I mean, I kept addresses to knowing that I had gone through this process before, but the actual, like, the vagabond periods of my life even, I couldn't account for very accurately, let's put it that way.
And even more importantly, for the last 3 years, you have to have references for every location. So not only do you have to have the location, but you have to have someone who knew you at that location. And if you don't keep track of that person, then it takes OPM longer to do the investigation. So let's say you knew Billy when you were at this location 3 years ago, and Billy's moved three times, you've moved three times, you don't know where Billy is anymore. Guess what? For a top secret clearance, the investigator has to track down Billy, and more importantly, has to track down three other people that knew you at that address at that time.
So what if you just didn't have anybody you talked to at an address? Have you ever run into that instance where there's just nobody?
I've had a couple people who really didn't. At first, they kept saying they didn't know anybody. And I said, listen, I understand you didn't know anybody, but the investigator has to find somebody. And so they're either going to find somebody that sort of knew you, or you can give them a head start. The challenge with personal security investigations is the harder you make it for OPM, the longer it takes. OPM is so far backed up that they like to do the easy investigations first. So if they look at a piece of paper, that 30-page application, they go, this is going to be easy, then they're going to put it on the top of their pile. If they look at the paperwork and they go, this is going to be hard, it's going to go to the bottom of the pile. And so that's the difference between an 18-month investigation or a one-year investigation and an investigation that takes 3 or more years to complete.
And you said 1 year versus 3 years. Is that what you can expect right now?
For a top secret investigation, right now we're not even seeing them anything under a year and a half. Right now I'm telling people plan on 2 to 3 years for a top secret investigation.
Wow, so if there's almost no chance that you're going to get a job and they're going to then do your clearance then.
It's challenging. You have to have a company that's willing to sponsor you, and the agreement with DSS is that company has to promise you that job when you get your clearance.
Wow. So you work a lot now, that's the individual side, you work a lot now with companies.
Mm-hmm.
And this was incredibly interesting to me, working with some startup agencies and organizations in Colorado that are looking to have cleared facilities. And that's just, now the people have to be cleared to work in them, but you have to, if you're a company and you want to have a government contract, your facility has to be cleared. And that's a whole new set, different set of requirements.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to us about that particular.
So people get stuck around the word facility and they think, well, that means I have a secure area or I have a SCIF or something along those lines.
SCIF is definition of that.
SCI facility, Special Compartmented Information Facility. It's where you can have
government information in your building.
Yes.
Gotcha.
The problem is, that's not the case. If 2/3 of the companies in the NISP, the National Industrial Security Program, that's the cleared companies, are what's called non-possessing companies. It means they don't have a secure area. They don't have a SCIF. They don't have classified information at their facility. They only have classified information at another facility.
Mm-hmm.
But they still have to have an overall facility clearance, and they still have to comply with the NISP.
NISP,
National Industrial Security Program.
Okay,
and so it's kind of like a personal security clearance for a business is mm-hmm. the easiest way to describe it, and the process can take just as long. The quickest is about 3 months. So if you're a young entrepreneur out there and you've got a new widget or something you think you can sell the government, and it's gonna fill a cleared contract, it's going to be a long process. This is not a quick process. It's 3 months if you already have a personal security clearance at that level. If you don't, and you're the only owner, or you're a senior, and you are the senior management official, it's going to, the company's clearance can't exist until your personal clearance has already been established.
Okay. So, and you were saying this could take just as long, like a year to 3 years?
So it's 3 months for an easy one with no complications, no foreign entanglements, no ownership issues, and they already have their personal security clearance. Mm-hmm. It can be up to 2 or 3 years if your owner if there's significant foreign ownership, or if there's if your owner has any criminal issue in the past or financial issues in the past or any of the clearance issues. It can take as long as it takes to get the clearance. Now, they do have a program called interim clearances where you can about 2/3 of the people with clean records can get an interim clearance at both the secret and the top secret level in a few months, 3 to 6 months typically. But some government agencies don't accept interim clearances. DHS, for example, doesn't accept interim security clearances.
So we're talking, if we take a step back and we say, who is able to work with the government? What percentage of people fit this category of clean records, clean financial, no entanglements, light background of not being everywhere, no vagabond times in their life? You know, it sounds like we're getting to a smaller and smaller population.
It is, but the key isn't that you are Captain America. That's mm-hmm. not, the government understands that that doesn't exist. And so they're not looking for someone completely clean. We've got clearance, I'm processing clearances right now for people with recent foreclosures. In fact, I just did one a couple months ago, and he had a recent foreclosure, he had a domestic violence conviction, and he hadn't filed his taxes in 3 years. So before we started his clearance process, we worked with him to help him out, to give him a chance at getting a clearance.
So what did that take? I mean, what did he have to get lined up? If you have a past like this,
right,
what types of things do you help get people lined up to start the process?
So the first is they have to have all the information. So you have to have all the background. Where was that case? Where was it filed? What happened? What was the consequences? What was the foreclosure numbers? What is all that details? And then we worked with him to help him mitigate any of those issues. He had never been to financial counseling. He had foreclosures and hadn't filed his taxes. He desperately needed financial counseling. Mm-hmm. He just never had done it before. So I worked with a company, and they, through the employee assistance programs, gave him free financial counseling. Mm-hmm. And then he filed his taxes. So even before we submitted his SF-86, that's the paperwork, that's that background check, we had him get as good as he possibly could get. And some of the absolutely red flags we eliminated as much as possible. Is he still late on filing taxes? Absolutely. But late filing taxes is completely different than haven't filed taxes. Mm-hmm. And in fact, 2 of the years, he was even owed money. He had never done it. Mm-hmm. And so the reality is he was only late on 1 year. But before that point, he was late for 3 years. That's the difference. That's what an FSO can do, is help those individuals out and work with them. So instead of the process for him taking 3 years, and more than likely he would have been rejected, mm-hmm. the FSO works with that individual, and now he's got a chance. I don't think it's likely, but he has a chance of getting through the process and getting clearance.
Okay. So now kind of back to the corporate side after we take a break and hear from our sponsors.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Over 3 million data breaches happen every single day. That's over 2,000 records being compromised every minute. So often, we focus on securing web data access. But what if the attackers are already inside, having gained direct access to your storage through data management software? When it comes to communications that go directly into your storage devices, make SNIA your first line of protection. SNIA's conformance testing limits outdated communications that are known to be used by attackers. It works continuously behind the background to make sure your storage is protected. To find out if your data is truly secure, visit our website at www.snia.org/cybertest.
Okay, so we're back talking with Doug Cameron, FSO, about security clearances and cleared government facilities for, you know, government contractors. And we kind of diverged back to what it takes and who can get a clearance and how we clean up records before the break. But we want to talk now and the companies. And what if I have a brand new company? It's a startup. Maybe even I had another company before. I had all this stuff in place, but now I have a new one and I need to cross all the T's, dot all the I's to be able to start this process. Kind of walk me through what I would do if I'm trying to even do it for myself.
Mm-hmm. So the first answer is you can't just want a clearance. The government has to tell you that you need a clearance.
And that means you have a contract.
And that means you have a contract, or there's another company that wants to sponsor you as a subcontract on one of their contracts. So the need to know that process starts with the sponsorship is what it's called. And you actually fill out a facility clearance sponsorship.
Okay. And that's the application for it?
It's pretty much the application for getting a facility clearance. And about a third of the applications are rejected because they don't have the right information. So again, just like it's...
So it's not because they can't get one, it's because they didn't put the right information.
Exactly. Exactly. So just like it's critical to have an FSO to help out on the personal security side of the house, it's critical to have a good FSO to help out on the facility clearance side of the house. Because what typically happens is you'll go through the process, it'll sit for 3 months, DSS will finally look at it, they'll reject it because you left something out, and then you start the process all over again.
So it's just one thing. Boom, it's all or nothing. It'll contact you and say, we need this.
If you don't have what you should have, then you go to the bottom of the pile until you can give them the information.
Okay. So now we do the initial filing. We have a contract we're under. Mm-hmm. We get all the paperwork right because you've done it for me. What's the next steps, the progression there?
So DSS will come back and they'll do an interview. They'll do an initial relationship, an initial orientation, let you know what the program is, let you know who they are. And then you're off to the races, so to speak, once your facility clearance happens and your personal security happens. The one thing is NIST requires that you have an FSO that's responsible both to the company for the program and to the government for the program.
And that is something that you can contract out to a third party, right?
Yeah, it's the NIST in there says that an FSO has to be an employee. And so most people panic, and they assume that that's their only option. And in a sense, you have to have an FSO that is an employee. However, you can have someone that does FSO support services and provide and does the work for the FSO that is a security professional like me. And so now instead of, if you're a small company, just like you hire most companies, small companies will hire out for legal support and IT mm-hmm. support and HR support and finance support and accounting support, all those different levels of things that you have to have as a company, you can do the same thing for FSO.
Okay, so you're having basically that the third party person is like a consultant and there's somebody at the company responsible, and it might be just a part of one of their duties that they're the one assigned to communicate with the government. So, but your contractor actually comes in and says, hey, here's everything you do, go ahead and understand it and push the button.
And I even, for many companies, will actually coordinate with the government directly. Mm-hmm. And the requirement that DSS has, it's under direct supervision. So the FSO tells me what to do, and I get it done.
Okay.
And so it can be that easy.
Okay, so a lot of organizations fit into this category. We know we're going to work for the government, but we want to get this stuff set up ahead of time. Before that big contract comes in and they mm-hmm. say, ho, you got to wait until all this goes through first. How do you work with clients to get them on the path before they even get the contract, knowing that they're bidding in the government area?
Well, the answer is very simple. It's just like the preparation for the SF-86. On the personal security clearance side of the house, you're gathering the information that you know is going to be needed. Mm-hmm. On the facility clearance side of the house, we're literally doing that application now. And it takes about 10 to 20 hours to fill out that application.
But other than the application, I know you had mentioned that if you go and try and partner with another company to get on an existing contract.
Mm-hmm.
So explain that process and that that the capability of how that could work for a company.
So let's say you're an 8A company. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I just got a call last week from an 8A company that does security guard services. They've never had cleared contracts before, but they really like that opportunity. So they asked me what the process is. I told them about the sponsorship package, putting that together, and then I told them and I talked to them about who they needed to find that already had clearances, and to become a part of that particular contract, then they would be sponsored in, and then once they got their facility clearance, not only would they be good to work for that subcontract, but now they're good to work for any cleared government contract to the level that they're cleared at.
Mm-hmm. So it's almost like to get in the door, you have to align with somebody who's already in there.
You definitely have to align. There's some unicorns out there where the government will come down and pick a company out there that they want to sponsor, mm-hmm. but that doesn't happen. More often than not, it's another company that sponsors a smaller company.
Okay. So, you know, in this area, we have the Lockheeds and Northrop Grumman's, the big government contractors that we know are all in there. So if you're looking to, you know, come into this area, that's a lot of times the approach. Find one of those companies that you could say, hey, this is something we're going to work on. Can you give us an example of where you've seen that done?
Yeah, and it doesn't matter whether it's a big company or a small company. In fact, a lot of cases, smaller companies are easier to work with. Because if you can match up with a smaller company that just doesn't have that capability that you offer, mm-hmm. They can sponsor you, and it's not that much of a deal for them to sponsor one or two new employees. For Lockheed Martin, it's a lot more challenging for them to sponsor a company for one or two employees because it's just not worth their time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't matter big or small, any company that is cleared can sponsor another company
okay.
for clearance.
And this whole process, anybody could do it yourself, right? Where would I, if I wanted to just try and go this alone, I know you don't recommend that, find an expert that can do it for you. Where would I look for information for the process to kind of step through it?
So the first place you're going to look for is a Defense Security Service is the prime. They've got about 2/3 of all the federal agencies that they support.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a website called CDSE. So if you type in DSSCDSE, it'll come up with a training curriculum for everything. Every question, every training you could possibly want, there's probably 500 hours worth of training material that DSS will walk you through. To become an FSO, you have to have about 100 hours of training before you can, and that has to be accomplished within the first year.
Is there a requirement for checking off those trainings with
yep.
the government?
Yep. So to become an FSO, you have to have the basic training, you have to have insider threat training, you have to have training on a bunch of different sub areas that are all kind of involved and all kind of throughout the process. It's about 100 hours
okay.
To become an entry-level FSO.
So now the person that you help that has just somebody at the company do that, do they still have to go through the training even though you're kind of...
They do within the first year.
Okay.
So they don't have to do it beforehand, but within that first year they have to go through the basic training. So that's still that 100 hours. So sometime in that next year, they're going to have to find 100 hours, but I can help them through the training as well. So
yeah.
The training that's 100 hours long, it's government training. And so when I took the training, it took me about 20 hours to complete.
Okay.
Because I already knew the information. And so it was just a matter of selecting the answers to get that done.
Yeah. So now you're done with the training part. What's the next steps for the do-it-yourself?
So the challenge is any company with a facility clearance, it's going to be 10 to 40 hours a month of rules, regulations, of managing clearances and databases and passing back and forth clearances and all the stuff that's required. It requires an annual self-inspection. Insider threat program, there's a 77 tasks that a non-possessing company has to be responsible for.
Okay. And that's a checklist. Boom, 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 boom.
And that's
boom.
A checklist.
So the first time before they get any start, they have to go through the checklist once and make sure they have everything?
At least once. Most companies that I've found, they go through the checklist the first time, and if they're honest on the checklist, they're compliant with about 10 to 15% of the items. And it takes me working with a company for a few months to get them to the point where they're 90% compliant.
Wow. And what is the, how much of it do they have to be compliant with? All of it, 100%? Or?
So when DSS comes out and does an assessment, they rank you. Mm-hmm. And for every vulnerability, you lose points. And for every enhancement, you gain points.
Okay.
And so if you have too many vulnerabilities, you
better have some enhancements to offset it.
Well, the problem is you can't have an enhancement on any vulnerabilities. You don't get credit.
Okay.
So if you have too many vulnerabilities, then you and about 5% of all businesses a year or per inspection fail their inspection. And they're given 30 days to fix whatever has failed. And then about another, and then 5% of that original 5% fail again. And if they fail again, then they lose their they lose their facility clearance.
So if somebody is in the status that they've failed or once, maybe even twice, you can come in and do emergency recovery on that to make sure that they meet and don't lose their clearance.
Yep. And you don't want to fail twice because you'll lose your clearance. So when you failed the first time is when you really need to bring in an expert, whether it's me or somebody else that, because
get you back on track.
You don't want to fail because it affects not only your facility clearance, but can also affect your personal security clearance. You can lose your own clearance as a senior management official and have to recertify through the process, which can take up to 3 to 5, 3 years.
Oh, wow. Whew. I mean, just thinking about all this makes my head spin. Not something I would enjoy doing. I'm glad there's people like you out there. Give our listeners a rundown of what you do, how they can get a hold of you, and reach out to you.
Yep. So the easiest way, and I want to take one step back, be careful when you find an FSO professional because some people call themselves FSO professional companies, FSO support companies, and they'll charge you hundreds of dollars an hour. But when you peel into it, what you really find out is they've got employees that are getting paid $10, $20 an hour, and they're managing 20 to 30 companies in a boiler room. And that's not what you want. It's not good for your company. You're not going to get your requirements done, and you're going to be behind the power curve.
So make sure you get your expert in and not just a bait and switch where they're coming with the expert and then put staffing it with interns.
If you're going to hire out, make sure you've hired out to a good company that's really got your interests in mind.
Okay. And so now how do they get a hold of you?
So the easiest way to get a hold of me is they can hit my website, fsosource.com.
Okay.
Or they can give me a call at 719-377.
We don't usually give out phone numbers.
Okay.
So let's jump back and say, Doug, how can they get a hold of you?
Okay. The best way to get a hold of me is fsosource.com. And it's got all my contact information. It has a little bit of a brief description on all the programs that I do. And the biggest thing is make sure you put your trust into someone who you can truly trust. It's no different than your taxes. You don't want to give your taxes to someone who doesn't have your interests in mind.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for joining today. It's definitely something that I don't think of too often. And when I do, it's kind of like almost like that fear comes up and you're like, oh crap, I have to go through all this. But thanks for joining today. I'm sure a lot of our listeners will get something out of this talk.
Thanks, Chris. Great talking.
Here's something important that you'll want to put into your calendar. The annual Cyber Symposium, Wednesday, November 1st through Friday, November 3rd, 2017. Brought to you by the National Cybersecurity Center. The annual Cyber Symposium is where elected officials and decision makers get the latest information on the key cyber issues of today. It's where they become better equipped to take action on the cybersecurity issues for your state, your city, and your company. RSVP now at www.cybersymposium.org. That's www.cybersymposium.org.
The views or opinions expressed by me during this podcast are my own and are not those of my employer, Colorado Technical University.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.